What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Financially Free Friday episode with Megan, your host, and I've got Travis with me. And we're going to chat about some things that maybe he incorrectly said on the Tuesday episode this week. Let's jump into it, Travis.
Well, just to be clear, it might have been incorrect, but maybe it will be correct shortly after this airs too, yeah. Right?
There's a lot of movement.
I usually record the pod like a couple days or a few days before it comes out, full disclosure. And with the way life is changing, I feel like I've lived and aged decades in like 4 weeks. I guess we're just going to have to record 5 minutes before the pod releases from now on. And even then it might be out of date. So yeah. Sorry, guys. I appreciate your forgiveness of us.
Yeah. Let's talk about Department of Education. What has happened since you recorded that probably a week ago?
First off, the fact that they have not stopped Department of Ed at the moment that we recorded this yet.
Yeah.
Even though all the reports were saying they were going to me almost suggests that there was a strategic leak that came out and almost tested the waters about what the views would be of people to see what would happen if they leaked that Department of Ed was going to close and what kind of like key constituencies would freak out and just to kind of see what, or maybe just to distract from that week's news cycle or something. And then when they realized, oh, maybe this isn't a smart idea politically to do at this very moment, they didn't do it when they could have. And so I think that there's actually like a pretty key pattern in the administration of let's push really hard until we come up against political realities of what we can do, and then let's stop. And you might say that's ridiculous, but it's actually, I think you can look through different things they've done and they already are trying to walk back some things. So I'll give you an example, right? Like the USAID execution in broad daylight. Just saw a post from Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, that 18% of USAID is going to remain under the State Department's purview. That's true that they killed and eliminated the vast majority of USAID, but 18% of it's still around. They talked about the elimination of all these government employees.
IRS news stories. Was a big one.
Yeah. And there was some news stories about some like Trump voting veterans were being laid off. And then you saw them start talking about, well, we're going to keep the good people, right? Whatever that means, right? But, you know, we're going to keep the good people. We're not going to eliminate absolutely everybody. You know, if somebody's doing a great job, we want to keep them, you know? So I think that what that's telling people is that they like the big headlines, I think. They like the big announcements coming out, right? And then if there's like something that's like really controversial, they tone it down or they move on to the next thing, right? They've done a couple things where they've done some freezes of funding that were immediately litigated and they decided they didn't want to get involved in litigating it. So then they just said, hey, just kidding. We're moving on to the next order, right? That was like the grants and loans order. Remember that one? I know that happened in like 1847. I'm just kidding because like that's how it feels like how many things have happened since then, right? But the grant, the stopping loans and grants, like that lasted for like a day. And then they were like, oh, this is going to be litigated.
Never mind.
We want to move on to the next thing. Just kidding. Yeah. So we're rescinding that order and issuing a new one. So I don't know. I think my overall take on the Department of Ed closure potentially happening was right, which is that if it did happen, it would be targeted towards elementary and high schools and like policy surrounding those. And like the student loan program would continue to operate. And maybe it's going to be at Ed. Maybe it would get moved over to Department of the Treasury, right? If they could, if that, they would have it their way. But like student loan programs are not changing just because of Department of Ed closing down. But what is changing, which we maybe could talk about, Megan, is just how gutted the support groups at Department of Ed are for things like PSLF complaints and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Like CFPB, that's something we've talked about. I actually had Justin come on last Friday's podcast episode to talk through constituent services, like leaning on that to help with federal programs that are causing you some issue, like the IRS, Department of Ed, CFPB,
I think that's definitely the way to go. Because like during the first Trump administration, I would routinely just say, if we have something that we need to fix a complaint for, how do we find the person who's on the education committee that represents you or the senior senator in your very small state, which is probably going to give you lots of attention compared to if you lived in California? Or I would always try to be strategic with clients of like, who do you submit a constituent services request through?
That's what Justin said too. He said, be strategic. Don't double up. Don't like send it to multiple places because that'll delay things.
And even target who's getting elected next. It's no lie that the senators and even congresspersons view constituent services as a thing that could really sway a lot of high information voters that would be maybe really disinclined to vote for somebody based on their party ID, but like they got me the passport, the family's Italy vacation happened. I might hate every single one of their reviews, but at least Senator so-and-so got me my passport, you know? And that's kind of a real example of me using constituent services once. I mean, it's interesting that I even fell for like a passport scam. That's kind of like vulnerable to admit. Because it's the same thing like the student loan scam. You think that may I be smarter than that? But, you know, I think that the reality is like all these things are just, if you're not an expert in the space, it's easy to make a mistake on anything.
Yeah. When you're busy and you get so much stuff, so many communications, so many headlines. So right. It's almost like, what do you pay attention to?
Well, and so I reached out to my senator's constituent services office. I like overnighted the passport stuff they needed. The people got everything taken care of literally within like 2-3 days. We were going to go to, I forget where we were going to go, but it was some like European trip. And it was like during COVID, nobody was processing anything at all, like at the post office, right? It was just so slow. And I just forgot because we had really young kids and we were like, I was so tired. Like, I think I just forgot like, oh, you need to give it like 6 months lead time. Uh-uh. But the thing is I got a resolution. They fixed it for me. And usually with these client constituent services things, you have to sign a waiver, like a privacy waiver form. Their first step is you give them authorization to like act on things on your behalf.
Speak on your behalf. Yeah.
And you do that. And then, like I said, if it's, you know, senior senator in a small state, or it's somebody up for reelection, or it's a House member who's on a key committee, you know, you just figure out who that is. And if you have, you know, a PS left problem, if they're not processing buyback, if they're giving you an incorrect payment amount, usually we have tons of success getting those cases resolved. Mm-hmm. What's kind of a nice effect about that is if you tell people in mass, like with our audience is a decently large audience. So you tell all these people, go start submitting constituent services requests. It gets the attention of Congress and they're like, oh, there's all these problems with programs not functioning correctly, like they were supposed to. And so it does have like a kind of a nice unintended consequence of raising awareness of problems that need to get fixed too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. If you didn't listen to that episode last Friday, go take a listen. Justin worked in constituent services for a bit. So he's got lots of experience, actual boots on the ground experience of what it's like for one of those representatives to be helping somebody with something. All right. How are you feeling now? Like, what do you think is going to come out in the news this week about Department of Ed or about stuff related to student loans? Any predictions?
I'm feeling terrible. I'm exhausted. I feel like I'm not sleeping great. I'm just kidding. I mean, I'm feeling okay.
Still haven't cut your hair or your beard.
I think I'm going through this phase. Like, so this is a podcast, so people that are listening, you're not going to see it. But yeah, I'm going through like a abandoned mountain man and like a cabin on the top of a mountaintop phase. Somebody turned me into a meme the other day, which I've never been turned
hilarious.
Into a meme. They showed a picture of me when I started Student Loan Planner, and I was so
clean cut, like your beard, trim, like clean lined. Cut, yeah.
So young and earnest looking. And then they were like, after 9 years of, I don't know, Department of Ed lying to you or something like that. And they showed my picture now. And
mountain
it was just,
man.
It was, it's not fair because I did that freaking Instagram live on 11 p.m. on a Saturday after we had just had a party at our house with like 50 people, and that was when they issued the stop work order. And I was like, bleep it, I should get on Instagram live even though I'm tired as bleep, and I should go just like tell people why they don't have to worry, because this is going to be terrifying to people when they find out.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I always kind of, if I can take 5-10 minutes to explain something when something terrifying happens to reduce people's stress levels, I like to do it. I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I got turned into a meme.
It's great.
At least everybody got a laugh out of it. But where are we going with that again?
Just where you think things are going to go this week, next week? What are your predictions? Yeah. I know predictions, they may not even matter.
Predictions are they're going to get the application up for IBR in a couple weeks.
You think so?
They took it down because they don't want the servicers to have that pick the lowest plan for me anymore. They don't want servicers to have
that option. Yeah.
They don't want that option on the form. I think they use this injunction as like an excuse to just get rid of that choice in the application. And then I also think that they might take down pay and ICR as options to apply on that form. I'm not sure if they'll do that because in theory, pay and ICR could be completely legal plans that just have the absence of forgiveness as a feature, right? So that's something that people are not really thinking about right now, is that, you know, you could still have pay operate. People could still sign up for it. You could still get credit for IBR forgiveness, but it might not count for, you might not be able to get 20-year forgiveness on that actual plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really complex like distinction for people. And so we have to just wait around and see what the court's final rulings are going to be on all this.
When do you think that's going to be? When do you think final rulings are going to be?
Probably after the NCAA tournament. I'm just envisioning all these judges sitting on the couch, drinking beer, eating potato chips, not working. Who knows? Maybe they get a little side action on some gambling parlays or something. And then after the NCAA tournament, I'm kidding a little bit, but I also kind of wonder, like, what the hell? Like, if you're a lifetime appointed judge, oh my gosh, what a great job, right? Because like basically nobody can tell you anything. Like, what are they going to do? Impeach you? You know, like that happens only if you murder somebody as a federal judge, pretty much. Again, I'm kidding. Hopefully any actual people that think I'm maligning the judiciary understand this is a joke. Satire is legal in this country, at least right now. And so hopefully they'll get off their bleeps and make a ruling. I think probably in the late spring would be my guess. To be fair, I think probably the way all this goes is, I don't know, they probably have a gazillion cases. They probably don't have enough staff, if I'm being more charitable, right? And they probably just take their sweet time to decide on cases unless it's like an extreme emergency. I think that's probably why it took so long. They probably have a lot of other cases they're working on and didn't feel like this one was something that needed to be prioritized, if I'm being charitable. And then eventually they made that ruling that just sends it back down to the lower courts. Lower courts have got a lot of things in their mind. This is also something that's not a matter of life and death, right? So they're like, well, we can put it off. And so I think they'll make the ruling in the late spring. And then I think it'll probably get appealed if it's not conservative enough to the liking of the state of Missouri. Missouri can appeal it to the Court of Appeals. And I'm a lawyer. I have to admit that, right? So people want to email us and tell me the legal part that I don't understand. But my assumption is they would appeal it. And even though you've got the Trump administration in defense as the defendant, that happened before with like Sweet v. Cardona. That Department of Ed absolutely wanted all of the for-profit schools to get complete forgiveness for borrowers. That was not really like a plaintiff defendant kind of situation that was adversarial. That was a situation where like, yeah, technically it was Sweet v. Cardona, but it was something that all of those people wanted to have happen, right? So in theory, it says Sweet v. Cardona. So I'm assuming the same would be the case for state of Missouri versus Trump, because it would just say, we don't like that they said the state plan was kind of okay. And so we're appealing that ruling to the Court of Appeals. And then the Trump admin could like show up to the court hearing and just be like, yeah, I agree. And then the judges will be like, oh, look, the plaintiff and the defendant agree. Let's make a ruling, you know? So probably the Eighth Circuit is still going to have the final say because that's a very conservative court. And so I would assume the state of Missouri will be very happy with that ruling. But I guess it's possible that the lower court could just be like, yeah, save is too far. But Congress very clearly did conceive of forgiveness happening at least under the ICR plan. So we're going to say like ICR plan forgiveness, totally legit. Anything besides that, we're going to say based off of the higher court's guidance, no, you can't do that. And so at least that would keep ICR open.
And IBR.
And IBR would, of course, would stay open like the Eighth Circuit said it would, no matter what. And then the pay option maybe stays open on a technicality where you can stay on it and get PS left credit, but you can't actually get discharged while enrolled on it. And then you just have to make sure that you've got a partial financial hardship when you're trying to get it actually discharged at the end. So that's some predictions. The other big problem, though, with all this, Megan, and I've been thinking about this, is the budget reconciliation anvil that's going to drop at some point. We know that's going to happen. And so simultaneously, you have to have a two-track mind going because you have to be thinking about what's the court's going to do. And then you have to be thinking about what the legislative branch is going to do because they could pass something that makes it really different from the current state with the courts. And they really could with that budget reconciliation bill for like especially new borrowers that could see a dramatically different set of rules. And then at the same time, there's the executive branch. The executive branch has not had time to sit down and think long-term how they want to do things yet. With Biden, I think it took until, Megan, I'm not sure if you remember, but I thought it was October of the first year they were in office before they put together their negotiated rulemaking committee, if you recall at all.
Was that 2020? October 2020?
It was 2021 because Biden was sworn in 2021. I think they got it together in like October. And I think they had the negotiated rulemaking hearings in like October, December, et cetera. And then I think they came out with the final rule sometime after that, like in the spring, I think memory serves me right. Or maybe it was even a little bit later than that. And then they came out with their, you know, initial rule, which was going to be like implementing SAVE early, right? So that was like mid-2023 where they were trying to implement all the SAVE stuff early, the early implementation part. And then the final rule was supposed to fully go into place in July of 2024. And the reason, of course, we know is you have to publish the rule by November of the preceding year for it to take effect mid-year the following year. So like they would have to get everybody in a room fast, come up with a negotiated rulemaking on like new rules for IBR. And then they would have to finalize the rules by November, which they're not going to do. And so that if you finalize rules in like 2026, that means that those new rules couldn't take effect until July 2027. So that's the other big piece of this is the executive branch is also all over the place on what they're going to do. And so you've got, so I think that's why I'm under so much pressure trying to like explain this to people, because I know how complicated it is because I've been doing this for nine years, and you've got to predict what's the legislative branch going to do, what's the courts going to do, what's the White House going to do. And then you have to synthesize all of it together. Yeah. So, I mean, this is really flexing my muscles to the max. I mean, this is like the student loan equivalent of absolute max bench press day. And I'm doing my best to try to figure out what it means, but I'm obviously not, I'm not Warren Buffett, right? I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm like the little oracle of student loans, but I don't know if I'm like as good as him, right? So it's like, okay, I think we're going to give you people some pretty good analysis on this show though, long-term, like stuff that's going to calm you down when you're super stressed. Like I can sense it too, right?
Oh,
like
yeah,
we get on these calls,
sure.
People are freaking stressed right now. Yeah. Like they are worried.
The inboxes.
It's a lot. And the thing is we haven't even had people's IBR payments jump up yet. Mm-hmm. And I think that financially aware people that listen to this podcast already know that, and they're already aware and ready for that to happen. Mm-hmm. But the not financially aware people,
that's when it's going to hit.
That's what keeps me up at night, is like those people are going to get destroyed. And what I mean by that is like, you know, we know people haven't recertified in so long. And even if they have, it's like on the save plan rules, which allowed, you know, majority of people to get $0 payments. You're going to have all these people that haven't paid attention to student loans in terms of making room in their budgets for that in literally 5 years. And they're all going to get these super high payments all at once overnight.
Yeah. What was that study I saw on the Slack channel from this weekend? You were doing some deep dives, but wasn't it like 44% of people right now have a $0 payment on an income-driven repayment
plan? It's more than that. No, it's more than that.
Was it more?
It's like 50-something percent.
Wow.
The save plan, more than half of people paid nothing.
Yeah.
And that was by design. Like the Biden administration wanted that.
It was almost like a loophole to get forgiveness, because the 10 and 20,000 didn't get approved. It was almost like
you couldn't get it approved. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I remember some of those negotiated rulemaking committees listening into those hearings. And it was like, we've gotten a little bit of heat because I started that SLP Insiders newsletter. Mm-hmm. Most people have been pretty understanding and stuff about it. The Biden administration is case in point why you need to keep your mouth shut a little bit more. I'm sorry, right? Like, just be honest, because I remember in those negotiated rulemaking hearings, one of the borrower protection center people was like, let's do 400% of the poverty line and let's make it, you know, 2.5% of it. It was some like formula that would obviously result in everybody paying nothing.
Yeah.
And almost everybody
almost
paying
like
nothing.
Family size being 99, right?
Yeah. Like literally what the student loan scam groups do. Yeah. Let's just put family size 93 and then you don't have any student loan payment. Look at us. We're geniuses. And then the guy got arrested on a plane to Mexico. So the body stuffed full of cash and every orifice in his body. It's right. That's probably TMI, but that actually happened to some student loan scam group. That's literally the GAO published a really brutal takedown of Department of Ed's IDR practices. Mm-hmm. And it came out in late February of 2020. And then the pandemic happened like 2 weeks after that. Nobody cared at the time because the pandemic took over the world.
Oh, yeah.
But it's true that there's all these fraudulent practices out there with IDR stuff. And it's absolutely true that the administration is going to be looking at that. Mm-hmm. You have to think that they will. And so that's why I'm always trying to be careful and conservative with how we do things.
Yeah.
Because I don't want ever there to be any question that somebody qualifies for something or somebody did something the right way. But yeah, like the family, so the family size of 93, we were talking about that in context of what again?
The 400%, like them coming out with that idea of 400%. And then,
okay.
Yeah.
So think about the way they released the IDR waiver. The IDR waiver, they said this could benefit, and the PSLF waiver. PSLF waiver was like, this could save borrowers up to $2 billion. Mm-hmm. Or more, and this could save 13,000 borrowers or more this amount. Mm-hmm. And that was like deliberately deceptive by the Biden administration, because they were trying to fly under the radar so there wouldn't be a bunch of lawsuits by these FFEL agencies to block it. And guess what? PSLF waiver happened. Mm-hmm. IDR waiver, same thing. They deliberately understated what it actually was. Mm-hmm. I remember calling reporters about it when it came out because it was such a big deal, and they had no idea of what it was because they didn't understand how the formulas were going to be applied right away. Mm-hmm. Like I did just from doing this, only this every day versus being on, you know, a broad education beat. So it's like they flew under the radar, but then what did they do with the save plan, right?
Screamed it from the rooftop.
It was hallelujah, save plan. Let's get all the TikTokers to come to the White House and do TikTok dances called SAVE, SAVE.
Yeah.
And then they would get on the TV and they'd be like, those radical conservative Supreme Court people, which, you know, depending on your political views, maybe that's an accurate statement. But then it's like, but I'm going to get around them and I'm going to go right behind them and I'm going to make this safe plan to dodge their ruling. And it's like, come on, man. Come
it's almost
on.
Like getting away with something, but then like,
I just thought of an example. I'm going to go eat a cookie in front of my toddler, but I'm going to do it quietly. Mm-hmm. I'm going to like go around the corner. I'm going to put it in my hand and I'm going to eat it, but I'm never going to have more of a profile than a very small little profile of the cookie while I'm eating it. Mm-hmm. But then if I go in front of my 2-year-old and I just say, look at this cookie. Oh my gosh, this is the tastiest cookie. It's only for me. I'm just going to eat the heck out of this cookie. And guess what? I don't care that you want the cookie because all of it's going in my belly. What do you think is going to freaking happen with the 2-year-old?
Yeah.
Screaming, anger, upset, right? And I don't know, just because we have a lot of people of different political persuasions, I'm not necessarily comparing the administration to a 2-year-old. You get what I'm saying, right? Regardless of your political persuasion, regardless of how you feel about politics, the reality is if you want certain loopholes to stick around, you need to keep your mouth shut a little bit more.
Yeah.
And so that is why I decided to do the Insider's Newsletter, in addition to obviously being able to support the mission of what we do.
Continuing the free newsletter, because that's still going. We're having that every Thursday like we always have.
We're still doing it. Wealth clients, if you feel any certain way about it, just send me an email. I'm always happy to take any kind of wealth clients' input on these things.
Mm-hmm.
The thought process I had about it, wealth clients are having everything implemented for them. They don't need these loopholes.
They've got their planner doing all this stuff.
Keep your blood pressure lower and don't get all of these loopholes that you have to worry about whether or not they apply to your situation, because most of them won't. And mm-hmm. then people that can't afford wealth, well, that's a great way to get some tips, right? Is if you can't afford wealth, you could do the paid newsletter, the Insiders, right? Because you can get extra stuff that you can kind of implement on your own. But mm-hmm. again, me eating the cookie quietly instead of like waving it in front of people, taunting people.
Yeah.
The consult clients, some people also like they don't want financial planning, but they also don't want to like have to do everything on their own. And so the consult service is still going to be around in our primary offering, I think, because it's just mm-hmm. like most people just want to have a quick call, get the expert answer and move on with their lives and not be constantly reading, you know,
the
newsletters.
Student loans, yeah. Yeah, and you've got examples too. You have multiple examples of where you also shouted certain loopholes from the rooftops and then all of a sudden something changed.
100%. Example is that same plan family size loophole.
Yeah, because you were excited about it. I remember like you were pumped about it. It was hard for you to contain your excitement and you said it all over the newsletter. And then all of a sudden, like a week or two later, it was like, oh yeah, we got to make this amendment. Congress was like, we got to make this little amendment. That's not going to happen. And then they changed it.
The Undersecretary Policy at the time followed me on Twitter. And mm-hmm. I didn't think about this, but he's actually DM'd me, the former one, DM'd me on like policy regs and like clarification. Mm-hmm. I just didn't have the social awareness of thinking, hey, if there's like a cool loophole, like, maybe you shouldn't blab about it. Maybe you should keep your mouth shut, you dumb Travis. And so, yeah, I even posted Excel models of what it would mean if they didn't change the definition of family size. I was like, a family of five can make $130,000 a year and pay nothing by filing separate. Whereas if you file joint, the limit was only 70. And so that saves the average family $400 a month. And so they've realized that.
Somebody saw that and went back to the next meeting and was like, you know what? I need to change this.
I think it was the Undersecretary of Ed. The former Undersecretary of Ed was very sharp on regs and like how to accomplish things through the regs. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's probably who saw it and why it got killed.
Well, and another example too, like you've been cited in cases before. Like you had an article cited.
Okay. I should not say this because people will be really mad at me, but I'm going to say it anyway. Well, I mean, I don't think they should be mad at me because I am not the reason that the lawsuit happened. Transparently, I am not the reason the Save Plan lawsuit happened. But it is true that I released I didn't even think about that. That's another example why I need to shut the bleep up. I released a detailed analysis showing how much borrowers would save on the Save Plan if it was enacted. And my projected number of savings for borrowers over 10 years was about $500 billion to $1 trillion. I released that, I think, first. Mm-hmm. And then Penn's budget model, which is like this widely respected nonprofit budget model place, it's like CBO kind of, they released their numbers, I think after me, that found it was going to be like $400 billion. And the administration was saying it was only going to be $100 billion, but that was because they were assuming that cancellation would go through and therefore it would only cost $100 billion, right? And they were also trying mm-hmm. to make it look cheaper so that it would pass.
Yeah, kind of lie with numbers a little bit.
Right. And so I was cited in a federal lawsuit for people that were suing to block the Save Plan.
Yeah, as like a resource or like something attached as a resource, basically.
Well, it was an official part of the lawsuit. It was an example mm-hmm. of different people's cost estimates. And I was like, oh, wow.
Crap.
I can't afford to have a full-time bodyguard. I mean, you know what I mean? So maybe I need to shut the bleep up, or at least be a little bit more careful and more circumspect about what I say.
So I think you just realize this is a very niche topic. There's not a lot of big talking heads in this niche area of financial planning, like student loans. Like, people don't want to touch student loans, but we, of course, like, that's our everyday.
Yeah.
And so if anybody's going to like look up something or look for information on what the average person is thinking about this kind of stuff, we're a target. Like, student loan planner can be a target for information to be used for us or against us on what we want. And so the insiders, the idea behind that was like, this is a close-knit community and let's keep it pretty close-knit for the most sensitive stuff that we talk about.
Yeah.
Is that how you would put it?
Exactly. And you know, you might see stuff in the newsletter marketing it. If you don't like that, take all the free stuff. Enjoy all the free stuff.
Yeah. We put out a ton of free stuff.
Well, this is obviously is free, right? And if you do want to get some of our best analysis, it's true that the equivalent of the save plan might cost $1 trillion and the save plan loophole with family size could save you $500 a month. Those kind of loopholes that would get a lot of attention if I bragged about it are definitely going to go behind the paywall, or they're going to be implemented directly by our financial planners if somebody's an SLP Wealth client, for example. Or, you know, implemented via a consult if people want to book a consult. So it's just a way to get more cutting edge info out to people in a quiet way. Obviously, people from the administration could sign up and read it, and I can't control that. But the thing is like, I was talking about the IDR waiver, but I was talking about it like just more quietly. Mm-hmm. I didn't like blab about it as excitedly.
Yeah, there was a difference.
And I explained what it meant, but I also wasn't braggadocious about it. And we helped people get it, but we helped people get it quietly. And mm-hmm. so, I don't know. I mean, I think that that's an example of like, well, people in the administration, they would still see my analysis on that. But the thing is you have to realize that it's a problem to want to sue to block it. And the reality is like amplification is a big thing that matters, right? So when I send something out on our email list that's got six figures of readers on it, it gets amplified and mm-hmm. paraphrased, rewritten, distributed in other formats that I don't even have control over, right? Because it goes out to so many people that like people use our stuff paraphrased in like other viral videos and marketing and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like if you have tens of thousands of people bragging about a loophole online or saying how excited they are about it, that's a much lower velocity than if you have a smaller group of people that are talking about it. So that was the thought of it. If somebody wants to tar and feather me, I'm ready for it. You can't do anything worse to me than the servicers and the administration's done to me. Throw me under the bus. Like, I've been already hit by a dump truck a couple times with this, all these freaking rule changes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think this was a good refresh because everybody's feeling whiplash. There's a lot being talked about right now. It's hard to make sense of everything. So we're going to do our best to stay timely. This is why I pulled Travis in. I already recorded an episode for Friday, but I'm pushing it to next Friday because I felt like we needed to maybe address some of the more time-sensitive things. And that's what's good about having an episode post two times a week now. We've got a Tuesday and a Friday episode where we could try to keep up to date with things a little faster as things quickly change. Anything else you want to chat about on this one?
Maybe one day we'll go to one a week again, you know, like if this is just too exhausting. I don't know, you know, it's like those Pod Save America people, they're putting out like three pods a week. And now they hop on, they're like, you know, world's burning. Nothing to talk about, though, except the world's burning. See you next week.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, my Friday ones, y'all know, if you listen to my Friday ones, I try to keep it upbeat. We're talking about other financial planning topics, building wealth, building our portfolio.
Good cop, bad cop, right?
Oh, yeah,
you come out every Friday,
I'm
you're
the
like,
good cop.
Guys, it's the weekend, life is good. Here's a way to think that's going to make you rich. And then I come on a Tuesday, I'm like, it's the middle of the week. Life is terrible. Your future is over. Yeah, right. Your student loans might be okay, but everything else is bleeped, you know? So I'm going to try to be a lot more positive because I think people could use a little more positivity in the world in general. Deep breaths, like in recessions, like people that have the education levels of our audience only have unemployment rates that go up by a couple percent. That means the vast majority of people are going to be keeping their jobs, even though there are a lot of people that are stressed and that have lost jobs from the recent cuts, right? Overall, especially if you're in the medical world, you're probably keeping your job. You're probably keeping your income. That has really positive implications for your life goals and your, financial outcomes, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that just means that like, yeah, this is stressful, but let's try to put things in perspective of there's still lots of loopholes, probably a lot that people don't even know about. We can keep things under control, keep people calm, keep putting out the content we do, And then, you know what? It's amazing. Every time Travis gets hit by a dump truck, I just get up and my beard is even longer. You know what I mean? So I'm just going to keep looking like the abandoned mountain man. I'm like Leo DiCaprio in The Revenant, you know, except I've got the same wife and I don't do the weird multiple girlfriends thing that he does. But, you know, sorry, that's this is a Friday episode. So I thought it might be fun to be a little silly.
Oh, well, thanks for joining me today, Travis. I hope everyone has a lovely weekend coming up. Hopefully this made you laugh a little bit. Any closing words before I close it out?
I mean, just manage your alcohol intake right now. Like, you know, I'm really into non-alcoholic beer, non-alcoholic wine, which is kind of like grape juice, honestly, but it's still interesting. So whatever your drink of choice is, that's not going to send you down a spiral. You know, enjoy it copiously within limits of moderation. And honestly, I did a live the other day where I was just kind of like, hey, this is like not in my self-interest, but like, yeah, just like tune me out for 2 months and then like turn it back on like in 2 months. You'll probably be like way better off. But I don't know. If you do find the jokes and the levity fun, then, you know, thank you. Obviously, listener, you listening to this podcast, we do appreciate it. We do see when you download it and it does keep us going. When you leave a review of our podcast, it does keep us going and it helps us continue to be motivated to put this stuff out there. So thank you for listening to this, for continuing to, even though I know this is sometimes a stressful topic for people.
Definitely. Yeah. Use that meditation app on your watch. I recently discovered that myself. And it's, if you have an Apple Watch, it's free. I'm sure there's a bunch of other free meditation apps, but even just 5 minutes really changes my mood, changes my, my pulse. So maybe try that out as well.
5 minutes of a warm bath with kids in bed. That's my meditation I need. You know what I mean? Just decompressing is really important right now. I think, you know, go on a walk, get outside, do something to distract yourself, right? Don't check the news so much. Maybe go on a light news diet right now.
Take notifications for news off.
Read more sparingly. Be ready for when stuff really does change, and we'll be there for you when it does.
Definitely. Well, enjoy your weekend and we'll catch you on the next one. Thank you, everyone.
What if you could get fiduciary financial planning specific to your profession that's student loan aware that could change your life? For a price much better than you ever dreamed possible. If that sounds good to you, go to slpwealth.com/pod for a free, no obligation 15-minute intro call with one of our own fiduciary financial planners to see if we could be a good fit for you. This podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered individualized investment advice. If a specific investment is mentioned, do not consider it a recommendation to buy or sell the investment. Seek first advice from a financial professional before implementing any strategies discussed. All investments involve risk, and past performance does not guarantee future results. Yay, compliance.